listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I know firsthand what it is like to struggle. I found the cure to binge eating, and now I help people all over the world find food freedom. And on this show, I am here for you too. Imagine waking up and thinking about your day, not your diet. Wouldn't that be amazing? That's the goal. So today we're going to take a peek behind the curtain of binge eating. And if we have time, I will open up the phone lines for callers. If you're on the Instagram live stream, feel free to leave a comment anytime or a question, and I will be sure to answer it. So at face value, binge eating appears to be about food. But when we look at the hidden factors and underlying causes behind binging, we see there is a lot more going on. So let's peek behind the curtain of binge eating. Binge eating is not just a matter of a lack of self-control or willpower. It's not about addiction. It is a coping strategy. And when we look behind that curtain, we see it's a way of managing stress, anxiety, depression, loneliness, emptiness, and more. All the difficulties of being human, it's a way of coping, distracting from that. And it is important to understand that these emotional triggers can be hidden, and these patterns can be hidden. So just the other day, someone mentioned that they previously saw their father as this big, powerful Wizard of Oz type, you know, powerful kind of person, and really strong, all-knowing, all-powerful. And then they realized, you know what? He's just a guy. Dad is actually just a dude, not so powerful. And people often tell me that they're not what they seem. They show one face to the world and they keep their real selves, or what they consider their real selves, hidden. So the face they show the world, the facade, gets the love, the acknowledgement, the attention, and the real self stays hidden and gets nothing. So all this made me think about the Wizard of Oz. Naturally, how could it not? So the Wizard of Oz is a story that can teach you a lot about yourself and your relationship with food. Actually, I'm going to explain that seemingly odd connection. And it can help you change the negative ideas you have about yourself. Because when you feel better about yourself, it is easier to make healthier food choices. And from there, lose weight. And again, I'm going to explain the connection between binge eating and healing from binge eating through the lessons of the Wizard of Oz in just a moment. But first, for those of you who have not read, because yes, it was a book first before it was a movie. If you have not read the book or seen the movie, because maybe you were, I don't know, raised on Pluto, or you weren't allowed to watch TV as a kid, or you were kidnapped by aliens or whatever. If you need a refresher, maybe here's the plot really fast. Okay. An orphan girl named Dorothy lives with her aunt, uncle, and dog Toto in Kansas. When a nasty neighbor threatens Toto, Dorothy runs away with Toto, and they are swept up in a tornado, and they land in the land of Oz. And under the guidance of Glinda the Good Witch, Dorothy heads for the Emerald City to ask the Wizard of Oz how to get home. Along the way, she meets a scarecrow who lacks a brain, a tin man who doesn't have a heart, and a cowardly lion who lacks courage. When they finally see the wizard, he tells them they have to kill the wicked witch, and then he will grant their wish. He will give a brain to the scarecrow, a heart to the tin man, and he'll make the cowardly lion brave. And he'll help Dorothy return home. So they defeat the witch and her evil flying monkeys, and they return to the Emerald City only to learn that the Wizard of Oz, the great and powerful Wizard of Oz, is actually just a nerdy guy, just a dude, who's fooled everyone into thinking he's scary and powerful. They also realize the things they thought were missing in themselves, they had all along. And Dorothy returns home under her own power. So what does all this have to do with food and overeating or binging and weight loss. Well, each of these characters has qualities or conflicts that you actually may relate to, and they may be pertinent to your life. When we identify and work through those conflicts, we are less likely to use food to resolve them, to escape them, or whatever. So let's start with the characters in The Wizard of Oz, starting with Oz the Great and Powerful. All right, he thinks he has to be strong and all-powerful to be respected. And so he projects this huge, powerful image to the world, literally and figuratively. In reality, as we find out, he is just a dude, just a guy behind the curtain trying to make people believe in his strength and his omniscience. He doesn't think he's good enough as he is, so he pretends to be something else to gain respect. Now, if you can relate to this in some way, you may think that you have to show a certain image to be likable. You may have to hide certain parts of yourself and try to hide behind the curtain, if you will, so you won't be discovered as a person with doubts, insecurities, anxieties, fears, anything you want to hide about yourself. You may have a sense of imposter syndrome. You may feel like you're fooling people, that they don't know what you're really like. Maybe you feel like you put up a good front, but it hides who you really are. And if you don't show your true self, then you never really connect with people on an authentic level. And Forever Anna Gray is relating to this on Instagram. Yes, imposter syndrome is quite a thing. And maybe you put up a good front, but it hides who you are, right? And all this leads to loneliness because you're not really getting love from others. The false front, the mask, whatever part you are playing in your life, that's getting the love, not you. And when that happens, that's when your experience feels lonely. It feels empty. And you can turn to food symbolically to fill that emptiness. And by the way, we don't consciously think of it that way. We're not like, you know what? I'm lonely. I feel an emptiness within. I think I will symbolically fill it with food. No, we just automatically go to eat something to fill the void or comfort ourselves, right? We're not even really aware sometimes of what's going on. So let me know if you're on Instagram, if this resonates with you, or maybe there's something, you know, completely different that's on your mind, but stay with me because I might just get to that. You will be surprised at how each character in The Wizard of Oz does pertain to you and your conflict. All right, so more Wizard of Oz characters. We come to the trio, the Cowardly Lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow. In some way, they all lack confidence and they don't see themselves as they are. The Cowardly Lion believes he lacks courage. But in fact, he shows a lot of bravery. He incorrectly thinks that courage means the absence of fear. In fact, courage is feeling fear and doing it anyway. That's courage. The Tin Man believes he has a heart, and he shows actually a lot of heart with all his empathy, his sympathy, the love that he shows throughout this journey, throughout his experience with all the other characters. He shows so much heart. He doesn't realize he has one. And similarly, the Scarecrow thinks he lacks a brain. But like the Lion and the Tin Man, he also has a lot more intelligence and a lot more smarts than he realizes. There's more to him than he thinks. And the way they all think about themselves, that's just an idea they came to believe about themselves. And it's not true. And it's not true of any of them. They have these false beliefs, these narratives about themselves that they have taken as truth. So maybe that relates to you. Maybe you feel like you're not as smart as people think you are, or as nice as people think you are, or as good as people think. Maybe fear stops you from moving forward in your life. Maybe you think you're not as warm and empathetic and connected as you could be to other people. If you can relate to these characters and those parts of the characters that were causing them distress, your self-doubt may blind you to the reality of who you actually are. And blind you to the qualities you do have. And if you're focusing on what you're not, instead of letting yourself see who you are, then guess what? You do not have a very realistic view of yourself. You feel like you're not good enough. That is painful. That is upsetting. That is hard. And when you feel bad, you are more likely to turn to food for comfort and distraction. You may have more of a relationship with food than with people. Because, you know, if you get close to people, they might see, oh, you're not this or that. You're not what I thought you were. Imposter. But if you avoid people and just think about your body and food, that is safe. It's also lonely and miserable, right? And that's where food comes in again, and it can function as comfort, as distraction, to fill the void. It serves many purposes. If you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. If you are turning to food, there is a reason. And we want to be really curious about what that reason is, rather than see food as the problem. It is the solution to the problem. That's the paradigm shift that I talk about in my show, my books. Food is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem. The problem is lack of self-esteem. The problem is not knowing how to manage certain emotions, how to identify them, how to experience them, process them, how to comfort yourself, how to soothe without food, how to be. Food resolves that problem temporarily. That's why it is a frenemy. It does something for you, but of course it also hurts you. So let's look at the other characters and I'll explain how they relate to you and your relationship with food. So let's go from the Wizard of Oz. Let's talk about Dorothy. Dorothy wants to run away from home because of an unfair, powerful person, the Wicked Witch, in a sense. An unfair person who is threatening her beloved Toto, her dog. Dorothy learns to appreciate, in the course of the story, the relationships she has in her life. She learns to take in the love and the connection and the support from others, just as the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Lion have to learn to appreciate their personal internal qualities. Forever in a Gray on Instagram is saying, for me, food is love. I always eat with people and I put it together with being social and warm feelings. Well, if it, and it is, like, food is connected with connection. Our first experience of being fed as infants, as babies, is feeling connected to another person. We're in someone's arms often. We're being held. We feel safe and secure and blissful and cuddled and all of those things. And that experience of relatedness is bound up with the experience of eating. And then later, of course, we use food for celebration and meals, and we talk and we connect and we relate with other people with eating. The key, though, is to find other ways of being loving to yourself or coping or feeling good and feeling loved other than using food for that purpose, right? That would be the goal and the challenge. So Dorothy, she learns in the course of this journey to rely on other people. How forever in a gray, how perfect that your comment was just as I'm talking about this, right? If you think you've got to be independent and take things on yourself, take care of things on your own instead of leaning on others or letting them help you, then again, you may be too disconnected from people because we fulfill ourselves through our relationship. How we talk about food and how we talk about people is very similar. We have fulfilling, satisfying relationships with other people, if we're lucky. We fill up on food. We have a satisfying meal, right? We use the same words. We're hungry for love. We're starving for affection or attention. We use the words that connote hunger and yearning for connection with people. We use them about food as well. So the relationship between relationships and food is very much apparent. If you're not allowing yourself to have what you want from people on a deep, resonant level, you may just have a relationship with food and your body instead. But the good news is you can learn to take in people's love when you feel lovable. You don't need to rely on literally taking in food to have that sense of fulfillment. And when relationships are satisfying, you're less likely to eat for satisfaction. Or in the case of Forever in a Gray, I love that name, by the way, great Instagram name. You're less likely to rely on eating with people to feel a connection and a sense of love with them and to them. And so when relationships are satisfying, you're less likely to eat for satisfaction. When relationships are fulfilling, you're less likely to fill up on food. Now let's get to Glinda the Good Witch. You know, when I first saw The Wizard of Oz as a kid, I remember wondering, why didn't Glinda the Good Witch just wave her magic wand and make everything okay for Dorothy? It would have saved Dorothy a lot of pain and fear along her journey. It would have been much easier. At the very least, Glinda could have told her about the power of the red slippers. You know, of course, then there would be no story. But instead, Glinda doesn't do that. She lets Dorothy learn on her own that she can take care of herself. Right? She can both rely on other people and she can take care of herself. Glinda is kind of like a good parent who helps us they can help us and they can do things for us, but they also teach us how to do things for ourselves. So, you know, when we're kids and we want parents to do something like, hey, you know, tie my shoes, and the parent says, no, you can do it yourself. Here's how, practice, you can do it yourself. That's how we learn to do it ourselves. So by doing that over and over and over, we learn to depend on ourselves and to trust ourselves and other people. So interdependence, we can be independent and rely on others. So Glinda knows that Dorothy does have what it takes to complete her task to get home. She knows it. She believes in her. Dorothy just needs to learn to trust that she has all the inner resources she needs to be okay and to get herself home. Like Dorothy, we all need to cultivate a kind, caring, sweet response to ourselves. We all need a little internal Glinda. Glinda believes in Dorothy. Because of that steadfast belief, Dorothy can move forward in her journey. We all need to believe in ourselves. We all need to support ourselves and be kind to ourselves. Glinda is sweet. She's kind. She's supportive. She's nice. She's encouraging as opposed to discouraging. And that's what a supportive, soothing, comforting voice sounds like when we comfort ourselves with words. When we comfort ourselves with words, we don't need food. Right? We need to learn to turn to comfort words instead of comfort food. And by the way, what does comfort food really mean? It means a wish to be comforted by somebody else. So when you learn to comfort yourself, when you learn to be there for yourself, encourage yourself, be curious, not critical, then you feel better. When you feel better, you don't need food to distract yourself. Sounds easier said than done, and it is. But practice makes progress. It is possible. It is possible to create that change. All right, so now we're coming to the difficult characters. These are the ones that represent parts of ourselves that we don't want to look at. Parts of ourselves that maybe we feel need to change. So let's start with the biggest, baddest one of all, and that is the Wicked Witch. She is scary. She is nasty. She is horrible. Think of the witch as your internal judge, your internal critic, your internal attacker, your slave driver. It's the part of you that tries to kill off your spirit and stop you from living your best life. It's the part of you that's always telling you how you're not good enough, how you're doing everything wrong, or people don't like you, or you're never going to have what you want, or you don't deserve it. That nasty voice, that is your inner wicked witch. And that internal wicked witch, you know, again, it says, you're not good enough. You're too much. You're not enough. You need to lose weight. No one will ever love you. Oh, it's such a mean, nasty voice. I'm sure I don't even need to go on with any more examples because I suspect you're very familiar with your internal wicked witch, right? And similarly, the flying monkeys, they're super scary. They've given generations of little kids horrible nightmares. But when the witch is dead, what happens? The monkeys stop being so threatening. So they represent the scary things we're afraid of, the internal monkeys, the monkeys on our back, if you will. They only have power if we give them power. If we feed our internal witch, she gets bigger and meaner. When you're mean to yourself, when you're critical and vicious, when you try to destroy your self-esteem, you'll feel terrible. But when you feel terrible, one surefire way to feel better, although temporarily, is by eating something comforting. So keep in mind, thoughts lead to feelings, which lead to behavior. When you are mean to yourself, when you're a wicked witch to yourself, or a wicked warlock, you feel terrible. When you feel terrible and you don't have a way to comfort yourself and reassure yourself and be nice to yourself, that leads to the behavior of turning to food. We cannot be critical and mean and witchy to ourselves and simultaneously lift ourselves up and be nice. Those things don't go together at all. But when you change your thoughts, when you're not mean to yourself, you don't feel bad. When you don't feel bad, you don't need food because food is there to change the way you feel. If you don't need to change the way you feel, doesn't have any allure. And similarly, if you cultivate a kind way to respond to yourself, you're more of a friend to yourself, you feel good. Your self-esteem is higher. When you feel good, you don't need food because you feel good. So by destroying that inner critic and that judge, that wicked witch inside or wicked warlock, you will be free and you will feel liberated. And when that happens, binge eating or emotional eating or stress eating or disordered eating or whatever you want to call it, that is something that you don't do anymore. It is in your rear view mirror. That's when you have liberation. So the lessons from the Wizard of Oz are focused on who you are rather than who you're not. They're based on looking at, like, how do you relate to yourself? Do you think that you don't have qualities that maybe you actually have? Are you thinking you need to project a certain way of being to be likable and lovable? Are you cruel and hostile to yourself? So when you defeat your inner critic, your inner witch, and you attack all the flying mean thoughts that are flying at you, those monkey thoughts, and trying to hurt you, when you accept yourself as you are, you feel good. And by the way, self-acceptance doesn't mean complacency. You can still work on yourself. You can still want to lose weight. You can. The point is, you got to accept yourself on your journey. You can still work on something that you are developing. And this question about weight loss is something people ask me a lot. Is it okay if I want to lose weight? Of course it's okay if you want to lose weight. There is nothing wrong with wanting to lose weight. But what is your motivation? Is your motivation that when you lose weight, you'll be a better version of yourself? When you lose weight, you'll like yourself and accept yourself? If so, then that is the wrong motivation to want to lose weight. If you want to lose weight because you're just going to feel better in your body, you're going to feel more comfortable in your clothes, you're going to buy that cute little whatever, or, you know, wear a swimsuit at the beach and feel confident, if that's, you know, that's a good reason not to change who you are as a person or your likability or lovability. Elena is saying, I always thought I'd prefer food when someone else cooks for me instead of me cooking. Now I'm changing my mind. Yeah, so when someone else is cooking for you, it feels like they're nurturing you, they're taking care of you. I once had a patient who lost weight when she started getting her meals delivered, because there was something about knowing that people were making this food for her. She felt very taken care of. She felt very nurtured. Plus, it was yummy. My one food rule, it's got to be yummy. And she lost weight because she felt nurtured. She felt like almost loved. She felt taken care of. And because she felt that way and felt good, she wasn't binging. So how wonderful that you're, Elena, that you're able to take care of yourself, cook for yourself, is really shorthand for you are being loving to yourself instead of relying on someone else to do that. Forever in a gray, I feel that if I accept myself at this weight, I will stop trying to get down to a healthy weight. Okay, there's a difference between accepting your weight and accepting yourself. You can accept yourself and feel good about the person you are as you are losing weight. I'm not talking about accepting your weight. I'm talking about accepting yourself, who you are. And you know, if a friend of yours wanted to lose weight, would you be caustic and mean and harsh and critical to that person? Would you say, you know what, you really need, I'm not going to be nice to you until you lose weight. I'm not going to accept you as a friend until you lose weight. That would be ludicrous. No, you accept your friend and you're just happy for your friend that she wants to get to a healthier weight and not be pre-diabetic and be healthier and feel better in her body. Same for you. The point is that you want to, you know, be kind to yourself, cultivate self-acceptance. Is not the same as body acceptance or body positivity. So self-acceptance doesn't mean complacency, like I said. You can still make changes. Self-acceptance is not based on perfection either. You're never going to be perfect. Nobody is perfect. Nobody on earth is perfect. I like to say the only thing that's perfect is, you know, it exists in geometry, an isosceles triangle. And the only reason I say isosceles triangle is because it's kind of fun to say isosceles. Okay. So you just have to be where you are, accept who you are, and relate to yourself with some kind of nurturing and kind acceptance. The point of the Wizard of Oz is you've got to accept yourself, who you are, to get to where you want to go. So where do you want to go? What do you want to change? And maybe you don't need to lose weight to have a relationship. If that's what you think, because many people say, well, I'll lose weight and then I'll date. Or when I lose weight, then I'll do this thing I've always wanted to do. Imagine maybe you can find someone who loves you just as you are today. What a concept. Or that you can go and get that job or make the change in your life or travel or do whatever it is that you've been putting off until when you get to that ideal weight. Maybe you can do it now. When you feel good and you're happy in your life, you don't need to eat for comfort, distraction, or as a substitute for people and relationships. So, you know, which one of these characters do you most relate to? Let me know. And forever and a great, I'm glad you see that distinction. Self-acceptance is accepting the person that you are. I know body positivity is a big thing. I have yet to actually meet someone who can truly embrace body positivity. It's great in theory. And for those of you or the people who are able to do that, that's great. I applaud you. That's wonderful. Anyone who could say, you know what, I feel good in my body and my, you know, whatever my weight is, I feel good in my body. That's body positivity. Wonderful. In my experience, most people don't feel that way. But again, make sure that you want to lose weight for the right reasons, not to feel better about yourself, not because you're going to be a better version of you if you lose weight, not because your life will change when you lose weight, which is the illusion the diet industry sells us. You know, you want to change your life, just lose weight. What an amazing superpower that would be if it worked. Lose weight because you want to be healthier. Lose weight because you want to feel better physically. Don't lose weight because you want to feel better about yourself. So self-acceptance happens at any weight and can be there as you lose weight. All right. So losing weight can become equivalent to losing unacceptable parts of ourselves. And it's easier to focus on losing weight than to think about losing disappointments or fears or concerns, anxieties, ideas that you have about yourself. If we circle back to the Wizard of Oz, these are ideas that you have about yourself. Just as the Lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow had false ideas about themselves. When they realized who they were, when they realized that they already had what they needed the whole time, because the Wizard of Oz didn't actually give them anything, they saw themselves more realistically. Remember, you learned these ideas about yourself. If you have a negative idea about yourself or you have a story about yourself, it comes from somewhere. We are not born criticizing ourselves. We are not born feeling bad about our bodies or bad about ourselves. Or we're not born thinking, I am too much to handle or I'm not good enough. We learn these narratives. They are interpretations of our experiences that we take as truth. And the idea is to turn them back into interpretations, which we can challenge. So the idea that, you know, you're not good enough, this comes from somewhere. The idea that, oh, when I lose weight, I'll be good enough, that comes from the diet industry and our culture. So really look at what is your narrative? What do you think is either too much or not enough about you? Where did you come to this narrative? Where did you come to believe these ideas about yourself? And what is the evidence for it? And what is the evidence to the contrary? Because when you can actually see yourself realistically, when you see who you are rather than what you're not, when you learn new ways of identifying your emotions and cultivating new ways of responding to yourself, everything changes. Forever in a Gray is saying, behind the guise of getting healthy, the truth is I want to be skinny. Sigh. Yes. And why do you want to be skinny? And by the way, that's okay. But why do you want to be skinny? Because I think that it's not just, oh, I want this skinny body. It's when I'm skinny, I will feel this or that. I will be this or that. We have this notion because the $60 billion diet industry sells us the idea that when we lose weight, we're going to lose the parts of ourselves we don't like, and we're going to somehow gain aspects of ourselves that we wish we had. So like the Wizard of Oz, want to think about, maybe you already have those qualities within you, and maybe, just maybe, you don't need to have those qualities. Elena is saying, I started taking care of myself when I changed the perspective of cooking for me to lose weight. So I'm cooking to better my blood work and be healthier. It took me years, but I'm getting there. That is a great attitude. Yes. And what you're talking about is self-care, nurturing your body and taking care of yourself, being there for yourself, and probably not just with cooking, but with attitude. When we have this critical notion that we have towards ourselves, and you know, it's always, you're not doing enough, especially if we talk to ourselves in second person, right? If you're always telling yourself you're not doing enough, or you need to change, or how could you have done that, oh my god, you made a mistake, oh, they're gonna think this, right? When you talk about yourself in second person pronoun, you're generally being critical and mean. When you can embrace like a first person, I am doing the best I can. I like me. I'm here to support myself. It's a lot easier to take care of yourself. And often that second person voice, that when you talk to yourself from a you place, it's just mean. That's your critic. That's one way of discerning your inner critic. Are you talking to yourself from a place of judgment and criticism? If so, chances are you are talking yourself in that second person voice. Sometimes all it takes is catching it and changing that to first person. For as an example, my patient who said that every day she would get up, she would go into the bathroom, she would look in the mirror as she was getting ready for her day, and she would say to her reflection, "You're disgusting. You're disgusting." Yes, that was mean, right? And I said, "Hey, can you change that you to I? And instead of saying you're disgusting, say I'm disgusting." And she couldn't do it. She was like, "Oh, that sounds harsh." Right? And it was. She could say you're disgusting to her reflection from a second person voice, but she couldn't say I'm disgusting. It felt mean. She realized that she was talking to herself actually in someone else's voice. Right? So one thing that you can do, and really practical strategy, is really notice if you're talking yourself in that second person you voice, which is really harsh and critical, that's your inner critic. And just switch it to the I pronoun and it'll stop you. Just like my patient who was like, "Ooh, that's harsh. I can't, right?" Really, really helps. And since we're talking about things like this, I also want to share another strategy, which is that when you're nice to yourself, or if you're saying kind words, really make sure that you use the right tone. Often, we're very nice to other people. I remember when I had my group, I had a group Saturday mornings when I had an office, pre-pandemic days, and people would always be they'd always be like, "Oh, it's, you know, so you ate the whole pizza. Okay, so it's okay. Like, what was going on? What was happening? What were you feeling? What do you think was the trigger?" And they were so curious and so kind, and their voices were very soft and nice. And then when it was their turn, just using I ate the whole pizza as an example, they'd say, "You know, and I ate the whole pizza, and ugh, I'm just like, I'm so disgusting and gross. I'll never change." Blah, 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 blah. And it would be like a whole different tone of voice, like super harsh. So watch the way you talk to yourself, the tone you use. When you talk to yourself in a kind way, if you say, you know, an example I say a lot is someone who told me that she talked to herself and it didn't help, it didn't change. So that didn't work, didn't help me at all. So I asked her, "Well, you know, what did you say?" And she said, "You know, I told myself that it's okay. I'm going to be all right." And that's how she said it. "It's okay. I'm going to be all right." Or actually, I think she said it like, "It's okay. You're going to be fine." So of course she didn't feel better, because would you say that to anybody else who's struggling? "It's all right. You're going to be fine." Like, no, that just doesn't help. That is just not encouraging at all. But if you say the same words, "It's all right. You're going to be fine. It's okay." Right? It has a totally different feeling. So the words we use when we speak to ourselves and the tone we use when we speak to ourselves is very important. And when you can do that for yourself, when you can really show up for yourself, challenge the narrative that you have for yourself, create a new narrative that's more based in reality, you feel better about yourself. And then food becomes just something you're having for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks, and not a battlefield. And oh, by the way, it's yummy. Again, my one food rule: it should be yummy. Because otherwise, you're in a diet mentality. And yes, you know, I'm talking about binge eating disorder, which is, you know, it's not really about food. It's a way of using food to resolve something internal and emotional. But when we talk about just diet mentality, deprivation leads to wanting something good. The anticipation of deprivation or the experience of deprivation makes you want that thing that you think you cannot have all the more. When you allow yourself to have it, you will enjoy it and you will have less of it. Well, the yummy rule is if you eat it, it has to be yummy. That is not synonymous with have all of it. But yes, very cute. Okay. All right. So that is how the Wizard of Oz actually pertains to your relationship with yourself and with food. I hope you found that helpful. And now I have some questions that I have collected that people have asked me. So let me just dive into these questions. This person says, I hate myself for binging. What can I do to stop? Well, I hate myself for binging. What can I do to stop? Well, what you have to stop is that level of self-hatred. If you say things like, oh, I hate myself. What's wrong with me? I can't believe it. I have no willpower. I have no control. I suck. I hate myself. We were just talking about the inner critic. That's your inner critic, even if it's from an I place. When you're disparaging yourself and hating on yourself, you're going to feel bad. And then you might turn to food or binge just to escape your own mean voice, AKA your own inner wicked witch or warlock. So to make that inner critic shut up for good, want to exorcise it, you got to be curious and not critical. You got to ask yourself why you ate something or why you wanted to eat something instead of focusing on what you ate or what you're eating. You know, look at it this way. Is something eating at you? Are you experiencing physical hunger or emotional hunger? And emotional hunger, it sounds too much like, I had a bad breakup and now I'm diving into the ice cream. Like, you know, Chandler on Friends. But if anyone remembers that, love Friends. I miss those Friends. Okay. That's like the typical stereotypical idea of what emotional eating is. But emotional eating really means you're eating something to change the way you are emotionally feeling, to escape your own mean voice and comfort yourself, to fill a void, even to turn emotional pain to physical pain. When we eat so much that we're in pain, we've turned emotional pain to physical pain. It is easier to focus on and get rid of physical pain than it is emotional pain. Or maybe you're displacing something. Are you getting mad at yourself for eating when really you're mad at somebody else? Or are you disappointed in yourself for eating or binging? Hey, if you couldn't be disappointed in yourself, who or what would you be disappointed in? Forever in a Gray, I'm here every Wednesday at this time. I'm really glad that you like the show, and I'm glad you're getting the book. I think you'll enjoy it. And by the way, for those of you who've been with me for a while, I just did the final proof of the Binge Cure Journal, a guide to liberating yourself from emotional eating, taking control of your life, and feeling good in your body. The Binge Cure Guided Journal is coming out within the next, 3 weeks. Yay! All right. So be curious, not critical. Talk to yourself as if you were your own best friend. If your friend ate a bunch of ice cream, you wouldn't say, oh my God, I can't believe you ate that ice cream. You make me sick. That is disgusting. You would be kind and you would be supportive. So how about take that friend quality that you show to others and turn it on yourself? Yay, Elena, I can't wait too. I'm so excited. It's been a long time in the making. The guided journal, and I'm super excited. Actually, the proofreader and the designer, they were all like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is so helpful. I love working on this project, which made me feel so good. Yes. So it's going to be helpful to a lot of people. The other thing, like I was just saying, talk to yourself in a soothing, kind tone. A warm tone is like a verbal hug, right? And when you do this and when you practice, and you get better and better at it, you won't believe the difference. You will feel better. And when you feel better, you can comfort yourself with words and not food. And by the way, you are perfectly imperfect, like my cup says, you're perfectly imperfect. Embrace the fact that you're perfectly imperfect, because that's what makes us interesting. Being perfect really doesn't sound very interesting. For those of you who just saw Barbie, think about the first 10 minutes of that movie. Were those perfect Barbies having a good time and really were they having an interesting, good, fulfilling life? I don't think so. Okay. Next question. I'm usually good during the day, but I can't stop eating at night. What can I do to change? Okay, well, a lot of binge eating episodes occur at night. Why is that? So for one thing, during the day, we're busy. We're working, we're taking care of kids, we're working and taking care of kids or grandkids, or we're just doing a lot to keep us occupied. We have things to do. We have errands, we have things, we've got projects, all of that. So at night, instead of being in a state of doing, we enter a state of being. And when you are being with yourself and you're not distracted by all of these thoughts, that's when unwanted thoughts and feelings can creep into our minds. But before those thoughts can reach our conscious awareness, they can trigger a binge episode. So we often turn to food so quickly, we're not even aware of what's going on inside because we're so good at protecting ourselves. Like actually binge eating and using food in this way is a way of our mind's way of protecting us from painful thoughts and feelings. It's only that it actually creates more painful thoughts and feelings. But we avoid anything that makes us feel bad or powerless or afraid or anxious or lonely. We avoid it. And if we don't have strategies to deal with those thoughts and deal with those emotions, we use food to cope because binging helps us escape. It numbs us. It comforts us. It is a frenemy. It does something for us, helps us cope, but it is also an enemy in that it makes us feel so bad about ourselves and it's not healthy and it's bad for our bodies and for our self-esteem. So the next time you feel like binging at night or eating at night, get really curious about why. Instead of focusing on what you're eating, what problem is it solving? If you weren't eating or thinking about food, what would be on your mind? What would you be feeling? What would you be thinking about? It is a lot easier to focus on food. It is a lot easier to focus on what you are eating than what is eating at you. It's easier to diet, but ultimately it just keeps you in a loop of always, 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 always thinking about this all the time. I want you to be liberated. I want you to heal your relationship with yourself so that you are not constantly waking up and thinking about what are you going to eat? What are you going to not eat? Feeling bad because you ate that, or not having strategies to be there for yourself and to cope and be nurturing to yourself. Because when you achieve that, you do achieve food freedom. Then you can enjoy food without it being a way of coping, right? Okay, so I have time for one last quick question. What do I do once I identify why I want to binge? What do I do? Do I just sit with my emotions? Very common question I get a lot. Okay, so here's what you do after you identify why you want to binge. Instead of heading to the kitchen or the drive-through or picking up that DoorDash app, I have some creative ways of expressing your emotions. In the book, by the way, in the book, The Binge Cure, I have prompts for all emotions because you can't sit through your emotions. You can't sit through them. You can't ignore them, drop them, positive think them away, gratitude them away, or stuff them down. The only way to get rid of feelings is to feel them. So I give you a lot of prompts in the book, but here are three other creative ways to deal with feelings. One is write down, they sound so goofy, that's my disclaimer, they really work. Okay, write down all your thoughts and feelings on a sheet of blank paper. Just everything that's bothering you. I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm scared, I miss this, because, and also not just identify the feeling, but why. I'm upset because of this. It means this, right? Just get it all out on a piece of paper, and then, this is the fun part, rip it up. Rip up the piece of paper. It is weirdly satisfying. And it also gives you, it makes you feel empowered instead of being victimized by your feelings. It makes you feel empowered and you literally get them out of you onto a page and then you get rid of them. Also, journaling really makes a difference. There's something about writing that gets those feelings and thoughts out of you and onto a page. Hence, my Binge Cure journal that is coming out in the next few weeks. Much better than stuffing your emotions. The other the other kind of creative way to deal with feelings is to draw them or paint them. What color is anger? What does pain look like? When you conceptualize feelings artistically, it distracts you a little bit, but it also makes you feel better because you're expressing it. And when you express your feelings, you stop eating to avoid your feelings because you've expressed them. So that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio, or you can listen later on any podcast platform. And for a deeper dive into this topic and many, many more, check out my book, best-selling book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in all formats, including audiobook, where I read it to you. So take good care. Stay curious, not critical. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.